Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to another great live session of the third annual Fundraising Success Virtual Conference and Expo. I'm Margaret Battistelli-Gardner, Editor-in-Chief of Fundraising Success, and I'm pleased to welcome you to A Fresh Look at Social Media, sponsored by WellCard Health. Before we get started, let me point out a few quick tips on how to make the most of today's live session. First, if you have any technical difficulties, troubleshoot by clicking on the Help widget at the bottom of the console marked with a question mark, or let us know via the Q&A box. You can also use the Q&A box to submit your questions to today's panelists. We'll be addressing select questions at the end of the session, and you can send them in at any time. Please make sure you turn off any pop-up blockers on your computer so you can utilize all of the widgets on this console. And I'm sorry, I giggle every time I say the word widget, and I've said it so many times today. But to figure out what all those widgets do, please click on the Tips for Attendees widget below to learn how you can customize your experience today. You can even tweet right from the console. Also, as you probably know, each of the sessions in today's conference are eligible for CFRE credits. The tracker document required to apply for the credits for the session can be downloaded via the resource widget on the console. Lastly, if you leave the session at any time or you'd like to view it again later, you can access the entire presentation from the auditorium in the FSC on-demand environment, which will be open for 3 months beginning on Monday, October 15, 2012. Let's get to our session. Please welcome Levy, Director of Give Together, and Ephraim Gopin, who is a global expert on fundraising and social media, and he is also our resident smarty pants, so consider yourself warned. Everyone's talking about social media and wondering how to use it in their fundraising campaigns. I'm not sure our speakers are in total agreement on that issue, but here they are to give you some fresh perspectives. Ephraim, let's start with you.
Hi, everyone. I'm honored to be part of today's Fundraising Success Virtual Conference with so many nonprofit smarties. Thanks, Margaret, and the Fundraising Success team for giving me a few minutes to talk to you today, and thanks to WellCard Health for sponsoring. So, by way of intro, I'm Ephraim Gopin. I've worked in the nonprofit sector for the last decade. I've done everything from CEO, PR, marketing, event organization, fundraising, grant writing, and everything in between. I currently work with nonprofits and businesses to help them craft social media strategies and get out there talking to the masses. My real passion is engaging people, conversing, and schmoozing, which is why I love social media so much. It's a natural extension of what I was doing as a fundraiser, and I'm thrilled to share with you a few tips today. Before I begin, if you want to get in touch with me, I'm always on Twitter at fundraisingisfun, there's no G. You're more than welcome to read my blog where I discuss social media and nonprofits at fundraisingisfun.com. I'll be mentioning Pinterest in a few minutes, so you can connect with me there. If you want to learn more about me, you can go to LinkedIn. And for those of you out there who enjoy Mad Libs, the best way to contact me is via my blog's contact page at fundraisingisfun.com. Enjoy filling in the form. One housekeeping item. I'll be mentioning a decent amount of sites and links, so you can go to this link, www.fundraisingisfun.com/FRPrezi, and that link will be at the bottom of all the slides. That's where all the links and sources will be. So today's presentation is entitled A Fresh Look at Social Media. I'll be discussing some ways to map out an effective social media strategy. I'll be looking at some social media platforms you might not have heard of or thought of using, and then I'll be passing the ball to Richard Levy, who'll be discussing taking your engaged community and using that to raise money for your organization. So, you want to start using social media. Awesome. But before you do anything, you need to build a strategy. And I liken it to diving into the deep end of the pool. You'll probably want to take some lessons, start in the shallow end, get the hang of it before diving in. Or a fundraising campaign. You'll create a strategy of who you want to solicit, how you present the campaign, set a donation target, and much more. Social media is exactly the same. A strategy could have three components. First, there's the competitive analysis. Many nonprofits and businesses, too, surprisingly, don't take time to see what others are doing. There's a lot you can learn from the best and worst practices of competing or similar organizations, both locally and nationally. So via a good scan of the competitive environment, you can see what others are doing online, what platforms they're using, how they're engaging, and are people conversing with them. You can get an idea as to what value other organizations offer their followers. If you're not bringing added value to the table, people won't pay attention to you. And because you're competing with so many other organizations, you have to make sure to stand out. So if you manage a soup kitchen, you probably know other soup kitchens where you're located. Go look at their websites. Look at design and content. Take a look at which social media outlets they're utilizing and see what they're up to. And then go use my friend Rabbi Google and find other organizations across your state or province who also operate soup kitchens and learn from them as well. Once that's done, you move to the bulk of the strategy, which is answering the W questions. Answers to these are critical to the success of the plan being mapped out. So the first one we're going to look at is the who. We need to identify who you want to engage, supporters, donors, volunteers, important local figures, and others who'd be interested in what you have to offer, and possibly help spread the word. Specifically for Twitter, I have a list via the link on the bottom of the slide that you could read about the first 100 a nonprofit should follow on Twitter. We now know who to engage, but who's going to do the engaging? It's important to know that in advance, because many times this becomes a prisoner of budget and manpower. Having worked in small nonprofits and having worn every different hat possible, I do feel your pain. However, you're there to engage, and if the person who's in charge doesn't have the time to creating an online community, then your efforts will fall flat and frustrate you. Make sure you don't miss potential inquiries and opportunities. The what? So here we look at short and long-term goals. Because quality trumps quantity, the goals you set are important. Ultimately, you want social media to create the highest ROE, return on engagement, possible. You engage new people who never heard of you. You build brand awareness. You use it to strengthen and expand prominent programs. You recruit volunteers. And then down the road, you can potentially launch a campaign. So setting measurable goals is very suggested. Additionally, what are the guidelines for the community manager? Guidelines help the manager know what they can and can't post, how to deal with a crisis, and much more. If you happen to have seen in the news what happened last week during the presidential debate in the U.S. with a tweet from KitchenAid USA, you'll know that guidelines are unbelievably critical to your ability to maintain your good name online. And for more information, go to the link at the bottom of the slide. Let's look at the where. There are about a million different platforms you could be on. That depends. Where should you be? It depends on where your target audience is. Why be on a platform if you'll have absolutely no one to engage? Also, certain platforms are more suited to the type of work you do than others, and that can help determine where you should be posting. And now we'll move on to the when. When should one post? The answer, whenever your followers are online. A lot of this is through trial and error. I now know myself, for instance, that certain tweets have to be reserved for 7 a.m. Eastern Standard Time and 7 a.m. Pacific Standard Time for maximum exposure. Planning on blogging, you might want to set up a blog calendar to help plan when posts should go out and what the content of those posts should be. However, marketing expert Mark Schaefer reminds us not to be so tied to this calendar that you refuse to be timely. So if something happens in the news and you can directly tie it to your mission or activities, there's no reason you shouldn't blog about it as soon as possible. The how. So here you have to consider, how will you measure success? How does a social media strategy fit into your organization's overall PR, marketing, and fundraising efforts? How to get people to your blog? And most important in my eyes, how will you help your online community? You have to bring some kind of value, something special which your followers need or want to be a part of. If all you're doing is broadcasting the wonderful work you're doing, they won't follow you. That's not a condemnation of your efforts, but you have to do for them first. So, for example, if you run an alumni association, you can have alumni post job openings so that other alumni can apply or even let alumni pass resume up the chain for others. And finally, the why. Of course, many of you out there are going to say to fundraise, and I say not necessarily. You're joining social media to help create brand awareness, start conversations with people, foster a feeling of community, engage everyone, and build trust. Do all those things, and then you can begin to turn to your community for assistance. But two words of caution for the CEOs out there, and for those of you who have to get permission from the CEO to start tweeting, blogging, and posting status updates. Patience, grasshopper. None of this success happens overnight. Now you've satisfactorily answered those questions, the last stage in your strategy is to teach the community manager the various platforms they're going to be on, review the guidelines, and go implement the strategy. You're off and running. Now, a good strategy doesn't just focus on blogs, Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube, the big boys we all know about. There are many other powerful and equally important platforms your organization could join and benefit from, and I want to briefly discuss a few of them with you. And I can hear the collective, ah, from everybody seeing that image. Many people relate better to images than text. Especially in the 140-character world we live in, people don't have time to read. But to look at a picture, they always have a second. Heck, if you look how many pictures are posted in your Facebook feed of babies and kittens, you'll be amazed. There's no reason you can't build community around pictures. Remember, photos in general appeal to emotions, are more intimate and immediate, and are very engaging. There's that word again. Let's look at a simple mobile app by the name of Instagram. Over 50% of phones in the U.S. are smartphones with picture-taking capabilities. There's a reason Facebook bought these guys for $1 billion. Instagram just isn't a picture-shooting app. You can like pictures, comment on them, follow other people or organizations. It's another excellent way for nonprofits to engage their audience via pictures. By the way, pictures can be shared on Facebook, Twitter, and more through Instagram. But definitely make certain pictures exclusive to your Instagram feed for that added value for followers. Since we just discussed strategy, it could be your target audience loves seeing, sharing, and liking pictures. So why not use that to your advantage? Also, Instagram lets you search for keywords or hashtags. Use the search engine to find people with similar interests, follow them, engage them, and maybe they'll follow you back. Let's look at some ideas of how to use Instagram for your nonprofit. You could show people what you're up to, the latest news, via pictures. Find a theme for your feed and start sharing. So, yes, if you're an animal shelter, cute pictures of puppies and kittens work. Photograph and post some behind-the-scenes pictures. For example, take a look at this picture from my friend Meg Hoffman of Boston's Bay Cove Human Services, who posted this to Instagram while she was setting up for a dinner. That's a chocolate bar put in every place setting, a really nice touch. You can give followers a sneak peek of something you're working on. You could introduce your followers to the employees who work in the office because it's always helpful to put a face to the organization and its activities. You could show off supplies you use with constituents, or if you make and sell a product, show how it's made. Maybe your boss or the fundraising director is flying somewhere. Take pictures at the airport, the meeting places, and more. Let people know what you're up to. And finally, Instagram has filters, so you can change the appearance of a picture. For example, if you're doing a 70s themed event, filters can help you create pictures right out of the 70s. Though with the styles back then, I'm not sure you want to do that. And yes, I'm old enough to remember wearing Buster Brown shoes and brown suits as a kid. So if you're looking for nonprofits to follow on Instagram, take a look at my page of links on the bottom of the slide. There's a great post from nonprofitorgs.com. If some of you are having trouble accessing that page, as soon as I'm done in a couple of minutes, I'm going to go and double-check that the page is up, and if it's not, I'll make sure that it's there for everyone. So now you can take pictures, but what if you want to group your pictures together under one heading so people can view each category? Hello, Pinterest. Yes, the stats say that Pinterest is for women. Guess what, folks? I'm a man, and I love Pinterest. And contrary to what you may have heard, it's not just for posting pictures of food and clothes. Far from it. Pinterest allows users to post or pin pictures and add them to boards that you create, and here you can see some of the boards I've created on my Pinterest account. Each board is a different category, and it's visually appealing, easy to use, and a fun way to interact with people. Yes, folks, people can like, comment, and repin your pictures. Additionally, you can search for keywords or hashtags, another way for you to find people to follow and for people to find you. Like I said, these platforms are all about the engagement. Here are some examples and ideas for how your nonprofit can use Pinterest. You could run a contest. The famous store Harrods of London did this. They asked people to pin pictures of their dream front window display to celebrate the Queen's Diamond Jubilee. The winner was flown to London for the unveiling of the window. You can share pictures and images of donors who are being helped with donations, your constituents. Maybe you run a food bank. Share favorite recipes or dishes from the chef or head cook. Maybe give some thought to upcoming holidays such as Halloween and Thanksgiving and how you can use those. Now, I'll take another example. If you run an adoption agency, maybe you can post pictures to a board entitled Items Your Newborn Needs. My friend Leslie Clay, who works with Hope Cottage down in Texas, which provides adoption services, she uses Pinterest to showcase many different boards, including kids' rooms, kid-friendly meals, adoption resources, kid styles, and a lot more. And guess what? Even the Portland Police Department is using Pinterest to catch wanted criminals. For a little fun that I do on Pinterest, I sit on Twitter all day, but there are a lot of people I don't get a chance to meet. When I do get a chance to meet, though, I take a picture and I post it to this board called Tweeps I've Met in Real Life. Finally, from a nonprofit perspective, UNICEF in England used Pinterest effectively and creatively. A lot of us use Pinterest to post things that we want, such as jewelry, the newest tech gadgets, or the latest fashionable shoes. They created a board of a fictional 13-year-old girl in Sierra Leone, and they pinned pictures of what she would want: water, soap, food, and more. Makes you think and react and possibly donate. The ultimate engagement. As Deborah Askenaze points out in her latest blog post, which is linked to in that link at the bottom, and I'll fix it in 2 minutes, Pinterest is right now being used for storytelling and engagement, not so much for fundraising, and that's a good thing. Build the community first. The money will come in later. So I assume a lot of you on this call are on LinkedIn. You've heard of it, but are you using it? There are 175 million users, and it's very underutilized, or as I call it, social media's ugly stepsister. Think about it. If you need to do research on a donor or a corporate partner, look at their profile on LinkedIn. If you need to connect with someone, ask to connect, and once you're connected, it's a one-on-one conversation. Much of social media is showing people you're an expert in a specific field. LinkedIn has groups on every topic imaginable. Join those groups, like, comment on posts, engage with people, and down the road, post your own blog posts as well, because it's all about the engagement. Finally, it excels at lead generation because of its business nature and because it's one-on-one and not a group setting like Facebook or Twitter. So my time's just about up, so if you're interested in more info about Google+, blogging via Tumblr, Foursquare, and a lot more, drop me a line via the contact form on my blog, fundraisingisfun.com. Finally, I didn't mention the elephant in the room. It's not necessarily a social media platform, but it's how millions engage today, and it's called mobile. You better be there soon. It's where everyone is and where people are getting their info, news, entertainment, communications, and more. Oh, and yes, it's where they interact with the world via Twitter, Facebook, blog reading, commenting, Instagramming, and much, much more. They engage via mobile. So now you've constructed and implemented your social media strategy, you've built an engaged online community, and your followers love what your organization is doing. Time to pass the ball over to Richard Levy from Give Together, who will tell you how you can mobilize that community and their friends to donate to your organization, and yes, via social media. Richard, go ahead.
This is Margaret. I'm going to hop in for just a second. Sorry, Richard. I just want to let you all know that on the link that Ephraim had pointed out, there is just a hyphen missing between FR and Prezi. So if you put that hyphen in there, you will be able to connect to that link. And
thanks, Margaret.
With that, Richard, take over.
Okay. Thanks, Margaret. Thanks. And great job, Ephraim. I've got big shoes to follow. I'll see how I can do here. I want to take a moment, though, just to thank Margaret and Cherie and the organization for putting together this fantastic virtual event. It really does pull together a who's who of industry experts in a format that's really easy for folks to attend. And I'm very pleased about WellCard sponsoring this session as well. Just a little bit of background about me. I've been in the online fundraising space with nonprofits for 20 years, which is about as long as the internets have been in existence, as George Bush likes to say. So I've worked with a lot of the top 100 nonprofits, the international groups like Save the Children and Amnesty International, Compassion International, American Red Cross, etc., in all different forms of online engagement, primarily around online fundraising. And what has been happening the last 2 years, and Ephraim touched on this, or 3 years, is that nonprofits have really been wanting to move from people liking them on Facebook and being interested in them via social media to a point where they actually monetize that relationship and move those folks from folks who are just interested in a thumbs up to actually making a donation and having a real lifelong relationship with the agency. So that's what I'm here to talk to you about today, and I think what I'm going to do is move on to the next slide, and do this. There we go. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to use a case study of one person and one agency, one person looking to make a difference via Facebook and one agency looking to make a difference via Facebook and social media. And the agency in question is Save a Child's Heart. And Save a Child's Heart is a modestly sized organization. They have about 3,000 Facebook likes. They have 5,000 email addresses. And they have an annual budget of around $3.5 or $4 million. And they really wanted to make a difference. And I'm going to focus, frankly, on one person, and that is Lauren. And what Lauren wanted to do was not just bring in a gift of $50 or $100 or $200. She wanted to see if she could raise enough money to actually, you know, do one heart operation for one child, which is a $10,000 barrier. And she went about trying to figure out how to go ahead and network and fundraise $10,000. She really needed to spread awareness, and this was tied to a physical event, which was climbing Mount Kilimanjaro in Africa. So this could just as easily be a virtual event, as many of these are, but it's also a physical event. And Lauren's trek, metaphorically, took her from actually being a donor, an individual donor to the agency, you know, finding out about this particular fundraising scheme that they had, deciding to raise $10,000 on her own, becoming a fundraiser, and then ending up being the young leadership director for the agency. So she really has worn many different hats here. Okay? So she had some initial ideas, which were all around the traditional ways that people market, and that includes events, friends and family, and corporate sponsors. And she tried to do these kinds of things, but she's a younger person. She's 24 years old, and she didn't really have the wherewithal to do that. So what she figured out is that she needed to go online and actually use the channel to do that differently. And the way that this worked is that she actually used Facebook as the major driver for her in reaching her network and having a cascading effect from a fundraising standpoint. Okay, so you know, she really wanted to get a chance to drive people not just to the web page for the agency, but to market to them directly through her Facebook account and tell them about the activities that she was doing on a daily basis. And I'm going to show you how that happens right now. Okay? So what she did is she actually posted all of the activity and all the gifts that she got from folks that were sponsoring her on her Facebook page. She broadcasted it, and she had a chance to personally thank everyone that gave her a gift. And this started the viral networking for Lauren, and it actually spread the word in a dramatic and exponential way. She really didn't have that many friends, so each time they donated, she updated their status, thanked them, and then linked them to her fundraising page. And I'll show you the system that did that in just a moment. Okay, so there are a couple ways that she actually took advantage of technology to make this happen. First, there was a Facebook app involved in the campaign, and what that did is it actually updated in real time her fundraising results. It broadcast the Facebook feed from the nonprofit directly. It had video that was updated daily, and it allowed people to interact directly from within Facebook to do a donation to their to the campaign on the upper left-hand corner here, and also to invite their Facebook friends. And in addition to that, as I said earlier, the campaign got updated in real time, and the fundraising efforts got updated in real time. So everybody who was interested could check out the results on the leaderboard, and this ended up being a real interest generator for the campaign. Okay. The other thing that she did was that she had a personal fundraising page on the Give Together platform, which allowed her to make the pledge and to link to everybody that she knew very, very simply. And this was how she was actually able to blow through her goal and reach the $10,000 giving level. And this was something that not only she but another 13 or 14 individuals were actually able to accomplish. Now, the overall results were absolutely staggering for the campaign, and that includes individuals not just raising $10,000, but several people raising $20,000 just by passing the campaign to their social networks through Facebook, through LinkedIn, and through Twitter. And you'll see here that Emma was actually the champion fundraiser. She had over 1,700 people visit her fundraising page, and her network actually contributed $23,182. Okay? And the cool thing is that the aggregate amount for this particular campaign, which was largely social and centered around Facebook and social media connections, tallied up to over $700,000 for a $3 million agency. And that was a spectacular leap forward here. Okay. There are some really important, simple lessons that we learned through this campaign. And one of them is inspiring your champions. So, you know, it's great to get a single gift from an individual and to try and renew that gift annually. But what's really exciting is to have folks actually decide to take a pledge and spread the campaign virally and push it to their Facebook friends, to their LinkedIn connections, to their Twitter followers, and see what happens. And what we're finding with GiveTogether is that 6% of the folks who make an online gift actually become online fundraisers, and they average over $2,000 each raised, and 80% of those donors are completely new to the organization because the person making the ask has the relationship to the nonprofit, and their social media connections do not. So this is a tremendous way to grow the grassroots base of the pyramid. The other thing we're finding is that we're getting a 10% email-to-donor conversion rate, and we're getting 5.5% of the Facebook traffic donating, spectacularly high numbers. And this has to do with a lot of the different disparate components actually being coordinated in a way that hasn't happened before. And I'm going to show you how that happened with this particular campaign. Okay. But the lessons that we're going to cover are inspiring the champions, making the ask compelling, making it incredibly simple to connect to all of the people that the advocate or the champion knows, and make sure that you measure and show their impact, because that's really what's in it for them, the engagement. Okay? Now, inspiring champions is pretty easy, and I hope you all can see this here. But what we're doing is we're actually saying to the person who wants to be the fundraiser, how many friends can you invite to the campaign? And that's on the left-hand side there. And when they say, you know what, I can invite 100 friends to the campaign, what would my predicted impact be if I did that? And in this case, if they push the campaign or spread it and hit the invite button to 100 of their friends, they will raise $839. And when things are coordinated in this fashion, we can predict that because we know how many people give via Facebook, via email, via Twitter. And then they're one click away from inviting everybody they know and posting the campaign everywhere online. And that's spectacularly motivating. So a person goes from being a $50 donor to a $1,000 donor and gets enabled and impassioned to actually pick up and take the cause. So inspiring champions is great. You also need to make the ask compelling. And this is a challenge for a lot of nonprofit organizations. And what I mean by that is a lot of folks have a shopping cart experience or PayPal or a donor form that says, please fill in the blank. And what they do is they lose the opportunity to continually visually engage the donor and enroll them in the process. And in this case, this is a hunger-based organization. And when the donor moves their mouse across the picture, they actually see the picture turn from black and white to color and the plate of food actually fill up. And this enrolls them in the process. And this engaging thematic personal point of view is why folks are averaging 10% of the emails turning into donations. So I want you to take away from the presentation that it's incredibly important to continue to engage the donor all the way through the donation process, or they just drop out and they don't finish. Okay? So make the ask compelling. Make it simple for your constituents to connect to everybody that they know. So what you're looking at here is a way for them to connect to all of their email list contacts with the click of one button where it says upload your address book, and it'll upload any of these books regardless of which one they use. You'll see at the top the way to actually looking at all of the social media connections of the person. And at the bottom, there's a capability to actually stick the campaign right in somebody's email signature. So what you want to do is try and connect your constituents that are interested and passionate about the cause to everybody that they're connected with. And what we're finding, again, is that 6% of the constituency actually wants to become the next Angelina Jolie or the Brad Pitt of Charity Water. They just don't have an easy way to do that. So if you can help them connect the dots, you're going to greatly expand the number of fundraisers within your constituent base. Okay, next, we want to show the impact. And again, there are lots of tools out there that do this now, and these are fundraising tools, mind you, that take all of the activities of your constituents and actually roll up the folks that they've invited to fundraise, keep track of the folks who actually donate, and in this case, show the donor who only gave $300 individually that their network brought in over $28,000. And this then lets a $300 donor become a very important person from the nonprofit's perspective. Okay? I'm going to classify and sort of summarize the results from this particular campaign. They had over 12,000 visitors, almost 13,000. The fundraisers in this case averaged over $7,400 each. 80% of the donors that came in through fundraising virally and socially were new. The donation rates to the campaign averaged between 10 and 20%. And if you look all the way at the bottom of the screen, the average donation rate via Facebook for this campaign, for the entirety of the campaign, was 8% of the traffic donating. Okay? Very impressive. Okay, so five key success factors. Do something bold. Rally your fundraising socially around a unique project, idea, date, matching gift, whatever it might be, year end. People get engaged socially when they can get their arms around a particular project that they can help fund and personally make a difference. Okay? Set specific personal goals. In this case, they were asking people to raise $10,000. They thought it was too high a goal, but lo and behold, we had a large number of people who actually blew through that goal and raised $20,000 each. Make sure you track and give the VIP treatment to your top fundraisers. It means a lot to them. And measure the impact of what they've been able to accomplish for your agency. Okay? I'm just about out of the allotted time. I hope you found this useful. What I want to do is pause now for Q&A and also give you my contact information. You certainly can email me if you have questions or give me a call. And I hope everybody found this valuable. Thanks.
Great. Thank you, both of you. I'm going to start with a question that always comes up when we talk about social media, and I'd like for you each to take some time to answer it. Metrics and measuring. In every session that I've been in today, the question has come up, what do you do when you want to try something new, in this case it's social media, and the leadership or your boss or whoever is saying, well, okay, you're going to spend 3 hours doing this, but when are we going to see some profit? When are we going to see donations coming in? And if it's not immediate, we're not interested. Could each of you to talk about that a little bit?
Rich, you want to take that first?
Efren, why don't you take the first bite of the apple, and I'll do the follow-up.
Not a problem at all. Okay. So first of all, I want to apologize for my mess up on the link on my slides. But it's fixed. I hope everybody can get to it. Margaret, you mentioned the whole business of ROI. I read a great quote from Eric Marks, who's the director of social media for Nissan North America, and he said it's not ROI, it's COI, the cost of ignoring. You cannot ignore social media. That's it, period, done. You can't ignore it. It's there. People are talking. And by the way, people are talking about you. I tell organizations, you should Google yourself once a month. if not once a week, if not once a day, depending on your size, to see what people out there are saying about you. But people are talking about you, so you might want to be out there to engage. You might want to also be out there to drive the conversation. I understand that bosses sometimes are very bottom line, and they want to see donations coming in, and they want to see money. It takes time. There's nothing you can do about it. It's not a matter of after 6 months you should have 5,000 likes on Facebook, because that number means nothing to me. Really, it doesn't. It's not about the size of the community. It's the size of the engagement that you're doing with that community. So what to tell a boss? There's nothing you can tell a boss outside of patience. And, yes, to your question, I would say that if somebody doesn't have patience and they want to see immediate results, don't get on. Don't get on, because you're only going to do damage to yourself by only doing what I call being a Walter Cronkite, a broadcaster, and not being Ann Landers, talking to people, conversing with them, and helping them. If all you're doing is saying, look at me, look at me, look at me, I'm great, everybody will leave you. And so it takes time to build up that engaged community, to build their trust. And once you build their trust, you go over to givetogether.com and you start fundraising.
Okay, Rich, you ready to bite into the apple now?
Sure. Second bite. Ephraim took a big bite, though, out of the apple. So
I'm a big guy, Rich.
I know. So there's still more meat on the apple. My focus is a little different than Ephraim's. His is in sort of laying the groundwork, plowing the ground, seeding the field, taking care of your constituents. And my piece is what to do, you know, how to convert them into donors after you've done all that great work. And, you know, my take is very similar to Ephraim's in that, you know, it's things have changed so much in the last 10 and particularly 5 years. 10 years ago, people spent time on your website. The Internet had not evolved. Social media was not a big thing. Now they're spending all their time, or the largest chunk of their time, on Facebook, on Twitter. And if you are not engaging them and following them to where they are, your competitors are, and it's a non-starter for you. And to take Ephraim's point, you know, you have to ignore that at your peril. So it's the largest billboard that's out there. It's where everybody spends their time and their interest. And if you can't figure out how to cultivate your following where they have migrated to, you know, you're fighting a losing battle. So you have to do it.
A question that just came in, it's very interesting, and I know that organizations are looking at this, too, when it comes to text-to-give and mobile. When you have someone giving through social media or engaging through social media, what becomes of those names? What becomes of the donor name and contact information? Is there a way to then nurture that relationship further, or does it become sort of a one-time gift and you forget about them?
Well, that's a fantastic question. So, you know, first of all, there's the initial bar to get over, which is to move people from being interested in what you do to actually supporting what you do, right? And that's the piece that I'm focused on. But having said that, when somebody becomes a first-time donor to the nonprofit agency, it is exactly the same challenge that you have when they become a first-time donor through telemarketing, through direct mail, through whatever channel it might be. Your job is then to cultivate and steward the relationship with that donor and enable them to become a recurring lifetime, you know, planned giving prospect. It's exactly the same process. They're just starting in a different channel, and that's the way that we look at it.
Ephraim, do you have anything you'd like to add? I mean, obviously, sure. Everything that you've talked about is, you know, was about engagement and nurturing relationships through social media.
So if a donor comes to you and gives you money, besides the thank you letter and everything else and maybe putting him on their email list, go find him on social media. Go engage him. There's no reason you can't send him a private thank you message, a public thank you message, depending. Go find out who this person is. Because on social media, it's all there. And I'm serious. Whatever this person is, if this person is anywhere on the Internet, you can find out so much about that person. And by the way, that means you can nurture that relationship further. on their terms, on the donor's terms. Organizations up till 10 years ago wanted to do things on their own terms, the way I like to fundraise. Today, the consumer, the donor, they're the ones who take the lead here, and we have to follow their lead as nonprofits. So if I see a donor is interested in X, I want to converse with them, engage with them on X, because by doing so, they become a much more engaged donor. And now you've done two things. You've made them, one, engaged, and you've made them a recurrent donor. And that's really the goal.
Here's an interesting question that maybe not a lot of people or organizations think about, and it's very specific. When we're engaging with people online, are there any best practices about permissions to use their image? And our attendee said most permission tactics seem very clunky for this new dynamic environment. Can someone address that?
Okay. Rich, can I take that first?
Sure.
Okay. Having worked in organizations which dealt with people with disabilities, persons with disabilities and issues with children, certainly there are issues of what you're allowed to post and what you're not allowed to post. You have to be unbelievably careful, because anything that gets posted to your Facebook page and then gets shared to other people's page makes its way around the Internet. And if a parent or a guardian did not get permission for that picture to be used, you could be in a lot of legal trouble. Forget the bad PR, it's also legal. And yes, bad PR is also a very bad thing on social media. It tends to make the rounds very quickly. So you want to be careful. You want to ask permission. Any organizations that are out there right now that deal with children, I'll just take that as an example. I know in the places where I've been, anyone under the age of 16, we had to get parental consent to use their picture. And when we said picture, we meant on website, we meant on brochures, we meant in emails, newsletters, and on social media forums. And that really has to be your guiding light. You want to use as many pictures as possible. I talked about pictures as very important, but you also have to be unbelievably careful about what you're doing out there. You have no idea what people will do with those pictures and what they use them for. I say use caution.
Okay. We have just under a minute, and I want to ask each of you, Richard, we'll start with you. Just give us a quick, here's a wrap-up of what I want our attendees to take away today.
Mm-hmm. What I want the folks that have carved out a few minutes to get together with us today is to understand that the future is now, and that the folks that are connected to your constituents, to your passionate supporters, are interested and willing to give through them and to you. You need to take that step forward, because lots of nonprofits are doing that. They're starting to do it now. They're getting much greater success. And a lot of folks are ignoring it because they think it doesn't work. And that's just not the case. So I encourage you to investigate and to roll up your sleeves and to pick a test case for holiday or year-end giving or a particular campaign to try and do much better via social media, because it's happening now.
Okay. Ephraim, very quickly.
Very quickly, social media rocks. Social media is awesome. Social media is fun. Just like my name says, fundraising is fun. Social media is one big party, and it can really bring amazing results. Have a strategy, implement that strategy, and you'll see results down the road. And enjoy.
Great. Thank you very much. We're just about out of time. On behalf of Fundraising Success Magazine and WellCard Health, I want to thank you again for attending this session. If you're interested in discussing anything that you've heard, we encourage you to visit the Networking Lounge to chat live with other session attendees. You can also visit the info booth to fill out our show survey to let us know about your experience today. Please also check out the agenda for the rest of the day. We have more awesome sessions lined up, and we encourage you to view as many of them as you can. And if you can't watch them live, add them to your briefcase and view them at your convenience in the on-demand environment. And that'll be open for 3 months starting on Monday. Have a great day, everyone, and enjoy the rest of the conference. Bye.